Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome again to People, Places, and Perspectives. I'm your host, Maria Edwards. It's a beautiful day today. How are things in your neighborhood? How are you doing? I'm doing well, thank God. I hope all is well with you, with your families, and I hope you're doing that which you most desire to do and accomplish. Well, People, Places, and Perspectives is brought to you by Faith Production Studios. It's produced by Faith Production Studios, publisher of Daisy Magazine. Daisy Magazine is a bi-monthly online business and lifestyle publication promoting and supporting entrepreneurs through their journey, success, and human interest stories. So today's show is brought to you by Faith Production Studios and Daisy Magazine. Daisy Magazine, a bi-monthly online business and lifestyle publication. Okay, again, today's show will be on politics and religion, part two of the show we started last week. I think it was last Friday that we did part one of the show on politics and religion. But before I get into that, let's talk a little bit about what's happening today in the world today. As a matter of fact, in New York, in America, in New York State to be exact, New York City to be specific, is the arraignment of former President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. This is the first time in American history that a former president has been indicted. And, you know, the Constitution says that no one is above the law. And at the Supreme Court, it says equal justice under law. So make of that what you will, but the former president, as a matter of fact, before coming on air, I think by now he has been arraigned, because today is his arraignment. So by now he has been arraigned. And so, you know, let's see what will happen from here. The law is the law. They say he was indicted last Thursday by Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. And the indictment has not been unsealed as yet. So we don't know what the exact charges are. But when we do know, I'll be sure to do a show to talk a little bit about that. But because it is happening and it is it's of importance to not only Americans, but people the world over, because we have never seen this happening in the United States of America, but we have seen other countries where political leaders have been held accountable. And as a matter of fact, many of them have been arrested, held accountable, charged, indicted, arraigned, and have served time for whatever, you know, crimes they committed. So this is only new to the United States, where for a former president has been indicted and didn't know it was being arraigned. The indictment is yet to be unsealed, but it is in relation to hush money payments made in 2016 to Stormy Daniels. And while I will not get into the details of that right now, it's just the breaking news that has been unfolding, you know, since last year. And I know there are other criminal cases that he's facing, you know, other allegations in Georgia. He's facing Connie Willis down there in Georgia. He has issues with his election, calling for Secretary of State Ratzenberger to find him a couple thousand votes, you know. So he's facing those that, as a matter of fact, that the jury is deliberating on that. So we don't know whether or not an indictment is going to come from the case in Georgia, which has to do with election interference. That's one. That's another one. And then with him taking classified documents to his Mar-a-Lago estate, that's a federal investigation. We don't know what will come of that. But for right now, he is being arraigned. By now he should be, you know, he's going through the process of his arraignment. And we'll see what happens from here. We'll see what happens from here. And he did announce that he's running again for president in 2024. So we'll see what happens. I know there are protesters in the city, but I know the New York Police Department is good at it. This is what they're best at. The New York Police Department is one of the best, in the world, especially when it comes to situations like this. As a matter of fact, they've been studied the world over. And I know that the New York Police Department, the men and women there, will do a great job of keeping the city safe, keeping people safe, and also making sure that former President Donald Trump is kept safe as well. So, you know, all in all, the work has to be done. People have to do their jobs. And we'll see where things go from here. But that's the news at the top of the hour right now, where former President Donald J. Trump is being arraigned because following an indictment last Thursday by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Okay. Again, this is People, Places, and Perspectives, brought to you by Faith Production Studios, publishers of Days of Publisher, tongue-tied, publisher of Daisy Magazine, a bimonthly online business and lifestyle publication. And Daisy Magazine is available at www.magster.com/p/Daisy. That's www.magster.com/p/Daisy. Now let's get on with our show for today, politics and religion. And, you know, this is Holy Week, and it's Holy Week is one of the most important on the Christian calendar. It is about the crucifixion of Jesus, and this is the week when it's a solemn week on the Christian calendar for those who observe Christianity as their faith, who are practicing Christians. This is a very important week for them. And come, we have Holy Thursday this Thursday, Good Friday, and then Easter Sunday. And so it's a time for reflection this week. But as we get into that aside, as we talk about the state of religion, not only in America, but in the world today, and how politics and religion intersects, and at that intersection, what direction do we go from that intersection? What direction do we go in from that intersection? The direction that many seem to be taken is where political structures are taking guidance from religious institutions based on religious beliefs and religious practices. For example, looking at the United States right now, and, you know, evangelicals are one of the most powerful religious groups in America, especially white evangelicals. And they help to influence a lot of legislation. As a matter of fact, the overturning of Roe v. Wade last June, last summer, was one of those things that was heavily influenced by religion. And the Constitution, the First Amendment, talks about the separation of church and state. That is the First Amendment. It is first for a reason, the separation of church and state. And I am of the view that if it was the overturning of Roe v. Wade has not been one that has been well received in many circles. For some, it's a good thing because they have, since it became law in the 70s, it's over 50 years now, 50 years later, and here we are again back with, you know, back fighting for the very rights that once were fought for already. So here we are with the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And on the one hand, you have the pro-life conversation, and under the other, you have the pro-choice conversation. And, you know, both things can be true at the same time. We can talk about both things at the same time. But in making the argument for pro-life, where does it begin and end? It should not only begin, it begins in the woman's, with conception, and it seems to end with birth. Because when we look at the pro-life argument, there are more children dying as a result of gun violence in America. And nothing seems to be, those same politicians who talk about the value of, you know, of life, the value of life, and being anti-abortion, against the woman choosing an abortion, whether it's for medical purposes, race, rape, incest. Those who say that, you know, she should bring that baby's term no matter what, under any circumstances, are the same people who, when it comes to addressing the issue of gun violence plaguing schools in America, the very children that they say they need to bring here, those same people will say, no, it's not the time to have a conversation about that. Those same people would say, no, guns are not the issue. Well, a person's finger doesn't kill another child. It was the guns that kill them, especially AR-15. Now, those same people who advocate for, who are pro-life, advocates of pro-life, those same people are against any form of legislation that will help children that are right now in their faces who need help. What about universal pre-K? Universal free pre-K. What about that? Is that something that they would be willing to consider as part of their pro-life agenda? What about food assistance? So many children, millions of children in America have food insecurity. And I don't like to use the term food insecurity because it sounds very nice. Millions of children in America are going hungry. Many of them are attending school. Many of them do not have access to healthy food. Many of them do not have access to even school lunch because their parents cannot afford to pay for the school lunches. What about childcare? Many parents, the greatest problem that a lot of parents face, especially mothers, many of whom are single mothers, face, is help with childcare, needing help with childcare. What legislations are these pro-life politicians willing to pass to help women with childcare for the very children you say they are supposed to have, no matter what? Education. If a child is hungry, a child cannot learn. If a child is not safe at home, a child cannot learn. And many children are coming from homes that are, they don't feel safe in, because parents not working, but that's a single mother or two-parent family not working, or the situation, issues affecting the family, it could be sickness, it could be anything that's a social issue affecting the family. And for that reason, the child suffers. Where are the legislations to protect that child that you say as a pro-life advocate should come here no matter what? In the case of being pro-life and saying, you know, having abortion legislation, anti-abortion legislation, with basically regulating a woman's body, you're regulating a woman's body. There are no regulations, there are very little regulations for guns, but they're very quick to regulate a woman's body, and saying that she has no bodily autonomy, so the government is supposed to give, to legislate away her body, control what she does with her body. What about rape and incest? What if it's your child? What if it's your daughter? What if it's your wife? What if somebody is related to you? How do you feel about that? And no woman gets up and decides to have an abortion willingly. It doesn't happen because it's a serious procedure. It doesn't happen. But there are cases where it needs to happen. And in the case of rape and incest, why do you feel as a politician that you have the right to say to a woman, no, you don't have, you're raped, so, and God forbid you're raped and you're pregnant, bring that child before, carry that child to term because that's God's way. Really? You're telling me that somebody assaulting someone is God's way? Really? And that is why, as we sit here, 32% of Americans have walked away from religion. 32% have walked away from organized religion. There's a reason for that. Because you cannot tell me that on the one hand you're saying you love God, you love God, you love God. But on the other hand, you're expressing so much hate to the people, you love God whom you cannot see, but the people you cannot see, there's so much hate being expressed from the very Bible-thumping people that say they are God-fearing, they are men of God, they are women of God. Those people. And so when you have, especially young people now who are running, screaming from the churches now, they look at that and they come to the conclusion that you really don't care. You really don't care about the people. And I know this scripture, I think it's in Luke or in Matthew, but in the New Testament, I know where Jesus says, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, we say that, but the little children are here, and you dread sending your children to school for fear of them being killed in school by an AR-15. So where's the protection for those children? Where's the protection for those children? You force a woman to bring a child to term, whether or not the child is viable, whether or not that it is a viable pregnancy. That woman is now being forced in many states to bring the child to term, to bring that pregnancy to term, not child, bring that pregnancy to term. Many are died because they should have had an abortion. Many women have had to travel across state lines to get needed abortions for unviable pregnancies. Who gave any politician the right to legislate a woman's body? But there are no legislations for men's bodies. Because if pregnancy starts in the womb, I think it begins, as someone says, with sperm, because they sperm and egg, right? That's how it goes. So what about the responsibility of the man? It's okay for him to rape a woman, and that woman has to bring that pregnancy to term. Or he can sue, as has happened with this woman who was raped. She carried the child to term, and the rapist turned around and sued her. And not only did he get custody of that child that he raped this woman and gave to her, she also had to pay him child support. What kind of a society allows for that? What kind of a society? So when women say they're under attack, are they wrong? When there's proof that in fact it is so. So pro-choice does not mean someone is not pro-life. A pro-choice person is also a pro-life person. They're only saying, you don't have the right to tell me what to do. That's what pro-choice is. It's my body, my jurisdiction, my right, my responsibility to take care of myself and do that which is right for me. That's what the pro-choice argument is about. My right, my choice, my right to choose for myself. How dare you choose for me on my behalf? You cannot choose for me. And so when pro-lifers say they're making choices for the unborn, no, you're not making choices for the unborn. You're imposing your will and your feelings and your religious beliefs onto somebody else who doesn't believe what you believe. Are they wrong to say there's an attack on women? Are they wrong? Who gave you the choice? you are, you know, it's funny because during the pandemic, and again, this is People's Places and Perspectives, brought to you by Faith Production Studios, publisher of Daisy Magazine, a bi-monthly online business and lifestyle publication. Daisy Magazine is available at www.magster.com/p/Daisy. I'll put the link to Daisy Magazine in the description. Again, yes, back to my point that during the pandemic, there was this big argument about my body, my choice, my body, my choice. Why should I take the vaccine? This is my body. This is my choice. When so many millions were being affected by the other person's choice, if you don't choose to wear a mask or take the vaccine, you can cause harm to the other person. That was about. Yes, it was my body. Those who were against being vaccinated or against wearing masks were my body, my choice. But when it came to a woman saying she wanted to have an abortion, it was no longer her body, her choice. It was her body, but their choice. So how can this double standard be? If this level of hypocrisy is mind-boggling, because you look at the issues, you look at these politicians who cause the intersection of religion and politics, and you look at what they say and the kinds of legislations that they come up with, that's really harming women. That's really harming women. It's really harming children, because you say you're pro-life and you are, a woman is supposed to bring a pregnancy to term no matter how she was impregnated. She must bring that pregnancy to term. But after she has done that after she has done what you say she's supposed to do based on your beliefs, you then turn around and say, oh, yeah, but I'm not going to help you with that child that I told you to bring the pregnancy to term for, no matter what the situation is. Who says that it's right? Who gave you that right? Who gave you that right? And is it wrong for, why is it wrong for a woman to say, this is my body, it's my choice? If everything else is her choice, because after she has, and when we look at the whole thing is so hypocritical too. When you look at same arguments around being pro-life, those same persons make the argument that they are not going to protect the very person whom they impose their beliefs on. They're not going to protect them, not going to help them in any way, shape, or form, because now it is not their responsibility. How can it not be your responsibility when you force, and you, as a matter of fact, you have come with such strict laws that a doctor who provides an abortion to a woman in need can go to prison? What kind of a society is that? Because if a woman wants to do an abortion, there's nothing that can stop her from doing, no religion, no politics, no legislation, none of that will stop her. She's going to get it done. You know what the problem is now? She's going to do so unsafely. It was about having safe abortions. Abortions were safe, pro the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And as a matter of fact, abortions were taking place. But it's the risk that it was posed, and all the harm that was being done to women who were getting abortions. And so the conscious decision was made to, okay, then make it safe. So in the overturning of Roe v. Wade, it was a great disservice to women, because it's easy. And I don't understand the mindset of women who get up and say, yes, some other woman has no right to an abortion. No, you know, your situation is your situation. But until they find themselves in the situation that they're, the rights that they're taken away from another person and it's not there, then they find a way to get it done for themselves. And the same thing applies to men who are pro-life. And when their mistress becomes pregnant, they're the first ones to send her to get an abortion. So it's for me and not for thee. So herein is the problem that we have. Okay, guest calling number is 319-537-6084. To be a part of the program, to calling and make your thoughts known, 319-527-6084. This is People, Places, and Perspectives, brought to you by Daisy Magazine, a bi-monthly online business and lifestyle publication. So if we are to be honest with ourselves, it is safe to say that religion, there's a separation of church and state. Religion ought not to be brought to bear in the crafting of legislation that benefit lives on the ground, because every situation is different. Every person's experience is different. So it is one thing to sit in Congress and state houses, all across the country, or in the Congress and the Senate, and to make laws that harm the very people who voted for you, because each situation is different. What is it going to take for politics not to infringe on the rights of people who vote for politicians? What is it going to take for politicians not to impose their personal feelings and their religious beliefs on the masses? Because that is exactly what is happening. An imposition, because I was reading where a rabbi took issue with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, because in his faith, Judaism, abortions are allowed. Yet in the Christian faith, they are imposing their Christian beliefs on other people, other religious groups, because it is based on religion. It is based on religious belief. And that is imposing it on other people who do not believe like they do. Is that right? What about atheists, agnostics? You know, they believe what they want to believe. Why do you have the right to impose on those people who don't share your faith, who don't share your belief system? Why does any one group have the right to impose their beliefs on them? The same thing, we can go all the way back to slavery, to the civil rights, where religious people imposed their beliefs on other people. That's what condoned and justified slavery, using it to condone and justify slavery. They use it to condone and justify the civil rights, taking away the civil rights of black people. Religion was used to do that. And then because religion impacted and influenced politicians, they crafted legislation to justify the views and the beliefs of religious people at the expense of the people who are saying, no, I don't believe as you do. This is my body. This is my right. Why are you trampling on my right? So my question is, should we really take the First Amendment serious and make sure our political leaders adhere to the First Amendment, which says separation of church and state? Because too many legislations are not reflecting what the First Amendment says. There has been an interjection of religion into politics, and that injection of religion into politics is affecting and has affected many, many. We have to do better. We have to move away from that, for the sake of the masses who are most affected by an intersection of religion and politics that does not reflect the needs and concerns of the masses. I thank you for your time. I wish you well. I look forward to meeting here with you again on another episode of People, Places, and Perspectives. Until we meet again, I wish you well in your activities. I wish you well in your mind, your body, and your spirit. The word is love. Make it a great day. From Daisy Magazine and the production staff of Faith Production Studios. Have a good day. Bye now.